An update from the State House. It's the first Monday of the month. Time for our monthly check-in with legislative leaders. Today, Democratic Senator Eloise Vitelli and Republican Representative Dennis Keschel are here in the Augusta studio with me. Representative Keschel serves on the Appropriations Committee. Senator Vitelli is the Assistant Senate Minority Leader. Legislators are facing a wide variety of bills this session, from a statewide ban on plastic bags and more, to minimum pay for teachers, mandated sick leave, elimination of food shaming in public schools, a change in vaccination exemptions, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What issues are you following as they make their way through the legislature? What do you hope lawmakers will prioritize this session? Join us with your comments and questions. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Legislative activity is revving up in Augusta with a steady stream of public hearings and bills under consideration. Joining me to discuss the latest from the State House, Eloise Vitelli. She is a state senator representing District 23 in Sagadahoc. She is Assistant Senate Democratic Leader. And Dennis Keschel is Republican State Representative from Belgrade. He is on the Appropriations and Financial Affairs Committee. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for our legislative leaders? Is there a bill or issue you'd like to find out more about? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you. Welcome to Maine Calling. First, though, we're going to turn to Mal Leary, who is Maine Public's political correspondent. And Mal, where are we in this legislative session? What mile marker did we just pass?
We're very early in this legislative session. We have probably less than half the bills that are going to be considered actually printed right now. So that's always one indicator. It doesn't mean the legislature hasn't been doing things. There's been a lot of bills killed in committee, duplicate bills. What often happens is, say you have, let's use minimum wage, you got six or seven minimum wage bills. They'll kill off six of them, keep one, and only have the debate over that one bill. So that helps in terms of the process. But, for example, the biggest item this legislature will do is passing the biennial budget. It's what keeps state government going for the next 2 years. They're just starting the public hearings today on that. There'll be public hearings all month into April if we continue to have snowstorms. And then they will start the hard work of putting together a budget that will actually get the votes to pass. So that's where we are right now. We're into the process, but we got a long way to go.
You're talking about the biennial budget, the process really just beginning on that.
Yes.
But we are wrapping up the process on the supplemental budget. And, you know, that budget is exactly what one would think. The supplemental budget is some supplemental spending till the end of the year. What kind of things are we seeing in the supplemental budget this year?
Well, I call it the emergency budget because it's basically to bring the budget into balance for this year. But then there are some new initiatives in there as well, like $1 million for the Bicentennial Commission. Now, the reason for that is Governor LePage refused to go for more than $75,000 in the last budget process, and everyone knew that wasn't enough, so they knew there was going to be this supplemental. Governor Mills has decided to put $1 million in for that proposal. There's a provision in there allowing the public advocate to have a little increase in the fees that he gets, the assessment that comes back from utilities because of the large number of cases he's intervening in. And there's a lot of little moving around where one little agency may be short of money because they're small and they have to come to the legislature and say, we're $40,000 short, $50,000 short. Well, under the law, the legislature's got to move money to do that. They simply can't find money somewhere else within their budget without legislative approval. So this is a, just as it sounds, supplemental, emergency, whatever you want to call it. This is to pay the bills to the end of the year, with a little extra.
Mal, what will you be watching this month of March up here from your perch?
What I always watch this time of year, and that's the budget, because the budget is the single largest policy document that we have in state government. We'll have policy issues that will be debated in other committees, but all the biggies, all seem to boil down to the Appropriations Committee and their process. And often we hear, if it's going to get funded, it had better be in the budget or it's not going to get funded. So when you look at all of these literally hundreds of bills with price tags, if somehow they don't get folded in the budget, they're probably going to die for lack of funding come the end of the session.
Thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes, Mal. I know you're monitoring many things at once right now, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen.
That's Mal Leary, Maine Public's political correspondent, bringing in our guests here in the studio. Dennis Keschel, we're talking a lot about the budget. You have said public hearings begin today. At this point, do we have a sense of what there might be bipartisan support on and what might be the issues that there is some disagreement on?
Well, as you know, I think, anyhow, the Republicans in this session want to, we certainly have differences with the governor, but we want to be able to offer alternatives. So we're looking at offering alternatives, for instance, the Maine care expansion, Medicaid expansion. That's an issue that I think we can come to a compromise on, but we'd like to see if some of our ideas might work out. So there are a lot of areas I think we can come to agreement on. I think all of us want to get there. And I've worked on a number of budgets in my previous two terms, and we seem always to have these little differences here and there, but we come to an agreement.
Eloise, let me ask you this. For Democrats, is Governor Mills' budget, the one that we saw her present before the state legislature, is that a roadmap for you all? Is that how this Democratic caucus is working this session?
Well, I think the budget that she presented is a good start. It's the beginning of a journey. It's pointing in the right direction for sure. And I think we'll be taking a closer look, as Representative Keschel has said, at all the details that are in there and making sure that our priorities are ultimately reflected. I think we're looking forward to having the conversation and to hearing what the alternative proposals might be from the Republican side. And we'll see where it goes. As Al said, it's early in the process.
We're hearing a lot about priorities. And you all just heard from Lee Sofley, who's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and for the first time in many years, the State of the Judiciary address didn't talk about how the courts need more money. What Justice Sofley was doing was coming to you all and pleading for more money to address the opioid crisis, especially mental health and addiction. Is that a priority for your caucus, Senator?
Absolutely. I mean, making health care overall affordable and accessible to more Maine people is a top-line priority for all of us in the Senate Democratic caucus. And that certainly includes the opioid epidemic. I mean, we heard for years that the one thing that we could do to really have an effect on the opioid crisis is to pass Medicaid expansion. And we did that, and it's moving forward. And I think we'll start to see some impacts from that, in the next couple months. So absolutely, healthcare is our priority.
Representative Keschel.
Well, as I go around my district, I talk to people and they talk about the budget. And I'll say, you know, there are wants, there are needs, and there are priorities, right? And then you have to deal with the funds available. So we're going to be looking at all of this from that perspective. What are the wants? Because needs trump wants. And what are the needs? And then how do you prioritize them? As I looked at the budget, and I won't speak for the caucus, but as I looked at the budget, I thought there were a lot of priorities. And if you have, just remember, if everything's a priority, then you have no priority.
Is the opioid crisis, though, a priority?
Well, I believe it is. I believe you'll talk to any Republican in our caucus, and opioid crisis is a priority.
I want to talk about some of the bills. We've already made headlines this legislative session. I know that we'll have a whole lot more. But one of the things that's so interesting to me is the wide variety of what you all are already tackling. Let's look at, we know that the idea for voter ID has already gone off the table. That was rejected in the Legal Affairs Committee. But another perennial bill has come up, the idea of reducing or eliminating auto inspection. Senator Vitelli, is there a Democratic caucus position on this bill?
Not that I'm aware of. I think this is a perennial discussion, and I hear from my constituents on all sides of this issue, those who want more inspections, those who want less inspections. There are a few people who want to do away with them altogether. I think this is appropriately in the committee, and I trust that they will give it their due attention.
Well, I agree. I've heard about auto inspections back in the 125th and 126th when I previously served. And like then, just like now, there are people on all sides of it. So I would like to think the committee can work that out.
All right. A number of bills also looking at teacher pay. Is this a priority of either of your caucuses? I know it's in the governor's budget. I know there's a public hearing on a different proposal today. One would put the minimum pay for teachers across the state at $40,000, one at $50,000. Is this something that your caucuses are discussing already?
Well, certainly we're discussing this in the Republican caucus. And I have to say, my wife was a teacher. And when she started teaching, she didn't make enough money. And when she ended teaching, she still didn't make enough money. Teachers deserve to get good pay for the job that they do. The question about a minimum wage is like any minimum wage increases, right? It doesn't just impact those people that are making below a certain level. It impacts the entire salary scale. So you have to deal with the compression issue. So what is the true cost of a $40,000 minimum wage for teachers? Well, I've looked into a couple of my local school districts, and the amount that it might cost to do just the $40,000, get everyone up to $40,000, might be $35,000, $40,000 total across. But when you go up the scale and you take care of that compression factor, it's as high as 10 times that. So it's a significant amount of money that ultimately, like in a town like Belgrade and a lot of other minimum receiver towns in our district, it's one of those things that get passed down because we don't get state money, and it gets run through the EPS formula. We don't get state money, so it goes right down on the taxpayers' shoulders. So that's where we're at, and where I'm trying to find out ultimately where I'll land on that issue.
So at first blush, though, it sounds like leaning against.
Well, leaning against, I would say not leaning against, but trying to figure out what's a better approach. And how can we spread this across the, without impacting taxpayers? Now, I could talk about a bill I have in to help resolve that problem, but I won't at this time because I know you're busy.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Well, there's a proposal out called Raise the Floor. It's for minimum receiver towns only, and it's looking at
explain what a minimum receiver town is.
A minimum receiver town is a town that's got high property values and receives very little money through the EPS formula.
Like Portland.
Like Portland, but this wouldn't impact Portland as much, but it's like Belgrade.
West Bath.
Or West Bath.
Right,
or Fayette,
Belgrade,
Maine.
With all those beautiful lakefront homes.
Right. And we have a lot of summer residents that have lots of money and they can pay that. But when the taxes go up, it hits everyone, right? So when we don't get money for that, a heavy burden falls on our lower-income folks, and we have to do something about that because it's really breaking their backs. So I'm going to look at this minimum teacher wage. I think it's an appropriate thing to look at. It's a good topic for discussion. How that all works out depends, and it depends on a lot of things, how much money's available, so it's...
Senator Vitale?
Well, I really appreciate Representative Kessel's approach to this issue, and I would agree teachers deserve to be paid what they're worth, and they're worth a lot in my view. I come from a family of teachers, and I heard from a lot of teachers in my district that they were feeling underappreciated, underpaid in some cases, but really it's an issue of both compensation, and we need to have this conversation and figure out how we can best meet those needs for paying our teachers what they're worth. But I think we also have to look at the bigger picture of how can we empower our teachers and make sure that they're able to do their job, the job that they love, which is, in my view, one of the most important jobs anybody can have, which is to, help to raise the next generation by nurturing minds of the young students in their care. So it's a complicated issue. I'm glad we're having this conversation, and I'm hoping that we can get to a place where teachers will feel that they're finally getting what they deserve.
Do both of you feel confident that by the end of the legislative session, something will have been done to bolster teacher pay in Maine?
Well, I can say this. We will reach a compromise on that issue.
Well said.
Okay, so I'm going to talk next about a very, an issue that get some people's blood boiling. We're going to be doing a Maine Calling program on this next week. The idea of changing the vaccination opt-out. Is this a priority for your caucus
Senator Vitale. Right now, I should say that in Maine is one of the states in which you may have a philosophical or religious reason not have your child vaccinated before he or she goes to school.
Well, I think there are two priorities here that we see. One is to make sure that the rights of parents to make the best choices for their child is respected. The other is to make sure that public health is protected. And I think that's where we are. That's sort of the crux of the situation. I mean, I have heard from any number, as I'm sure Representative Keschel has, of people on who have strong feelings on all sides of this issue. And we'll continue to listen to those concerns. But I think ultimately what we're going to have to come down to as legislators is that balance of individual rights and public good.
And how do you find that balance?
I'm not sure.
Well, I agree. It's a balance. You know, I grew up, I was born in 1947, if anyone's interested, but I grew up in a period of time when polio was occurring. And I had friends come down with polio. And the salt vaccine was a lifesaver. And we grew up under the sense of vaccines are really good for you. As time went on, though, there were problems with vaccines. And I've heard a lot across my district from people who support the bill that's going to change the opt-out provisions to people who are adamantly opposed for philosophical and religious beliefs, just as Senator Vitale said. So I agree. I think we're going to have to balance that that issue between those who really have this individual private parental right and the rights of the population at large.
And we will be, again, having a main calling on this program March 12th, and my understanding is that the public hearing is the next day, March 13th. So that's where we are on that bill. And then a bill came up this session, which is something, I have to be honest, a phrase I'd never heard before, food shaming, the idea that school districts can't treat a child whose parents haven't paid for their school lunch differently than another child, can't offer them sort of a lesser version of school lunch. Do either of you know where we are in the process and whether that bill is likely to pass? I know it passed committee. Yeah, is it likely to pass the full legislature?
Well, you know, I actually hadn't heard about it either. And I was quite surprised that there might be school districts out there that would shame a student for any reason, right? Not alone because of something they can't control as a student. So the committee passed it out 9-0 ought to pass. So I'm going to be looking at that hard. I don't think people should be shaming their kids, any kids. So I'd like to think that it has a fairly good chance.
Yeah, I think it's part of a broader issue of hunger and making sure that all of our kids have adequate nutrition so that they have minds that are well fed and they can learn when they're in school. You know, so if there's something that's going on around food shaming, then I think we need to address that and you know, make sure that students are eating properly.
If I could just add, my understanding in some of the cases that people have heard about, it's not about the people that can't afford the food. It's people whose parents can afford the bill of food but haven't paid the bills. So I think that that's part of the issue.
All right. Well, we're joined here by State Representative Dennis Keschel and Senator Eloise Vitale. Eloise is a Democrat. Dennis is a Republican. We're going to listen to your questions and comments when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Bread and Butter Catering Company, committed to creating bountiful feasts and custom drinks showcasing their love for Maine. BreadandButterCompany.com.
A year after West Virginia teachers went on strike, educators there reflect on how they felt.
It was surreal, but it was also empowering and scary. It was loaded with emotion, walking out of your classroom not knowing when you were going to return.
I'm Audie Cornish. This afternoon on NPR's All Things Considered, the strike that led to teacher actions across the nation and why the struggle hasn't ended.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. You've heard the tones before, here on Maine Public Radio, and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine's emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant, and Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the latest updates from legislative leaders. Joining me today, State Representative Dennis Keschel, who is a Republican from Belgrade. He's on the Appropriations Committee. And State Senator Eloise Vitelli for District 23. She is Assistant Senate Democratic Leader. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Philomena, who is calling from Kittery. Hi, Philomena. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if the legislators knew about the bill LD-723. It is being considered by the Committee on Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And we were at the hearing on the 28th of February, and it seems like the committee members were only talking about granting a lease to the Spinney Creek Shellfish Company. The sponsor of the bill, Dean Rikerson, predicted that it was just a clarification and that it would just give the shellfish company the ability to get a aquaculture lease from the Department of Marine Resources. However, this bill, which basically concerns submerged lands beneath impounded waters, will basically take land from private owners in the state of Maine and give it to the state without compensation. So it is clearly...
Philomena, thanks for your call. Thank you, Philomena, for your call, and I want to let the legislators have a chance to respond.
Well, thank you, Philomena. I'm not familiar with that bill. It sounds like it actually should be in the Marine Resources Committee, so I'm confused as to why the Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Committee is hearing that, although now that I think about it, submerged lands is something that is covered by ACF, so that's, if that's really the crux of the issue, then that makes sense. But otherwise, I'm not really familiar with it. I know I do serve on the Marine Resources Committee, and we spend a lot of our time talking about aquaculture and how important it is to the economy of our state, to the communities that are on the coast. And I know that it has created some controversy as we go forward. So I'll take a look at this bill and see how it relates to the other issues we're talking about.
Yeah, I'll have to take a pass on this, too. I've heard a little bit about the bill in the hallways, but I really don't know much about it at all.
And to put things in perspective, how many bills are you all facing this session?
Several thousand?
Yeah, well, I think it's well over 22 to 2,500. I believe it's in that range.
All right. Well, Philomena, thanks for your call. We'll go move on to Brad, who's calling from Ogunquit. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I have a question about the 60% cut in revenue sharing, which occurred 4 years ago and is just now expiring, especially for our Appropriations Committee member. The Democrats promised to restore it. So, is it going to go back to its 5%, or are they going to extend the cutback? Thank you. I'll take the answer offline.
Brad, thank you so much for your question. And Dennis, as you answer it, do a little explainer for those people who are not following the issue as closely as you are.
Well, revenue sharing, as you know, is a sharing of the income tax, all of the taxes that the state collects, essentially, and it shares it with municipalities. Based on a certain formula. So the revenue sharing had cuts that used to be at 5% starting in the 70s, but it used, but it's been start back in the 2008, I think, cuts had to be made to balance the budget. So they started cutting the revenue sharing that municipalities get. So in the last session, as I understood it, the revenue sharing had been at 2%, and there was the budget had it brought back up to 5%. In the current budget proposed by Governor Mills, the revenue sharing in the 2020 is set at 2.5%, and in 21 it's set at 3%. So it actually is being cut back from where the last budget had revenue sharing. and it's being brought down, but it's increased over the previous 2% that it had been at. It's something that we'll all be looking at. Obviously, you know, there are, as I said earlier, there are priorities, wants, and needs, and apparently the priority here, at least in the proposed budget, is one where we need some money for other things, and so they cut back on that.
Yes, and thank you. I think in our caucus, it is a priority to restore the 5% revenue sharing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. How we get there is a matter of balancing those other wants and needs. Exactly. And so we'll see how that process goes forward. But I think we certainly, all of us, heard from our communities that revenue sharing is an important piece of the local budgets, and we have to do our part here at the state to make them whole.
If you have a question for our guest today, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We have an email from Karen. Senator Lisa Kime has sponsored a bill, LR 1020, entitled An Act to Eliminate the Double Taxation of Out-of-State Pensions. A very similar bill last year made it all the way to the Appropriations Committee. If other legislators would support LR 1020 all the way through, it would be very much appreciated. Maine State Treasurer Henry Beck has stated he would be supportive of the legislative change and offered further assistance. All of us who retired here in Maine are being double taxed. We already put in a state income tax from every paycheck, and that money is not recognized by the state, so we're losing for no good reason part of our fixed income.
So thank you, Karen, for that. I actually signed on as a co-sponsor to Senator Kime's bill. I heard from many of my constituents on this very issue, and I will do what I can to see it go through the process this time in a more successful trajectory than it has in the past. I think it's an important issue for us to try to address.
Well, from my district, I haven't heard a lot about this particular bill. It sounds like an interesting issue. I'm going to have to study the bill. I have not read it. But certainly it's one of those things where if compromise is necessary, I'm willing to come up with a compromise.
All right. We're going to go to Carl, who's calling from New Gloucester. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Hi. I have an issue with the auto inspection that I feel it's corrupt and abusive. And also, where does the money go? Is only 14 states still have auto inspections, safety inspections? And I live in Cumberland County, and if you have your check engine light on, you can't get a sticker. 7 years ago, I took my van up to Roe Ford in Auburn, and they said I needed $2,000 worth of work in order to have the check engine light go off. And it was unfortunate I didn't live in Androscoggin County, a few miles north of where I live. Otherwise, I would have gotten an inspection sticker. A friend told me to disconnect the battery and take it to a local shop. Disconnecting the battery clears the codes, and I got an inspection sticker. A few days later, the light came back on. About a week or two later, the light came up, went off. I've been driving the vehicle for 5 years since, and the vehicle is mechanically sound. Basically, this inspection is, allows for corruption. The other issue is because of that check engine light, I complained to my representative, Ellie Epsling, at the time, and, why not do away with it? Cumberland County and the rest of the state was in compliance with the Clean Air Act. And she came back and said, because of that check engine light, only in Cumberland County, Maine DOT received $30 million a year in federal funding. And I sincerely hope that money is spent on mass transit or other systems to reduce air pollution in this Cumberland County. But I would like, some confirmation on that.
All right. Thank you, Carl, for your call. Thoughts?
Well, check engine lights come on for a variety of reasons, and sometimes they come on all by themselves. So there are good reasons to have check engine lights, whether or not we have a safety inspection program. I was the director of the Bureau of Air Quality back in the days when we were implementing the Clean Air Act, and there were other reasons for the check engine lights. Like I said in the opening, the inspection issue receives a lot of proponents and a lot of opponents, and that's one of the issues that we're going to have to just listen more to. And about the $30 million, I'm not aware of that. I'll have to check with my counterparts friends in the air program to find out what if they get anything from that, and in DOT.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with some of the details that the caller mentioned. Either I know that whenever I see my check engine light come on, I head immediately to my trusted mechanic, and that's been my approach to this, is that I don't doubt that there's some incentive perhaps for auto repair shops to take advantage of the fact that we need an inspection sticker. But my counterpoint to that has always been to try to build a really good relationship with my mechanic, and so that I know that if he says that I need to do something, it's because the car is unsafe if I don't. And that's important to me because I drive a lot, and I don't want to get stuck on the road with a car that's not functioning properly.
Carl, thanks for your question. Yeah, sure. All of you, almost every legislator, except those who happen to be from the Augusta Bureau or area, drives a lot. We have a tweet from Bob. Ask about the status of the bill to buy CMP and make it public like Vermont.
I haven't seen the bill yet. I know it's out there, and it will go through the process as all of the bills have. I think it's an intriguing idea, and I'm not surprised that it's getting some attention given everything else that's going on with CMP these days.
Well, I've had a lot of people comment to me about that particular proposal. As far as I know, CMP is not for sale. And so if it were to go forward, it'd be a takings issue. And that's one of the things that we'll have to look at.
An email from Jean. Would the legislature consider giving teachers bonus pay up front, for example, cash or a direct payment of, say, $5,000 to defray student loans of more than $20,000, et cetera? Also, teachers are unwittingly hurt if they have a second job that deducts Social Security. When they retire from teaching, they discover that their Social Security is greatly reduced here in Maine. Two different issues.
Yes. So for the first issue, there is actually a bill that Senator Libby is working on, and it's in some ways a companion bill to one that I have to deal with the student debt issue, which is something that has gotten some attention because it is, in fact, a serious fiscal crisis for many individuals and for the state as a whole. Student debt is holding people back from doing things like buying homes, buying cars, really staying and living and working in Maine. So Senator Libby's proposal is a bond issue for $250,000 to provide a one-time loan payment. I think he's thinking of about $10,000 to people who will then stay and work in Maine for 5 years. It's a way to try to attract and retain our young folks and address the issue of student debt. The bill that I have is a student loan bill of rights. It's a bill that we tried once before and didn't make it all the way through, which would essentially create an ombudsman office in state government to handle a lot of the issues that student loan borrowers run into as they try to pay back their student loans. It's a complicated system. It's easy for people to get caught up in a false situation and fall farther and farther behind. So we need to get a hand on that basic consumer protection for our student loan borrowers. So I think those two together, and there are a number of other proposals as well to deal with this issue, will help not just teachers, but any one who wants to work and live in Maine.
Yes, well, back in the 126, I actually sponsored, and it was passed, a refundable tax credit for people dealing in STEM courses and then remaining in the state for 5 years. So certainly we should be looking at something like that. On your second question, though, about the windfall profit issue, that is the Social Security payments are lower, that's really a federal issue. I have looked at that for all the time that I've been in the legislature, and it's something that our senators have put in bills at the congressional level, and it just hasn't been able to move forward because there's 12, I think it's 12 states that have their own retirement systems. And as a result, you need to convince the other 38 states that they should let you have a pass on that particular issue. And it's something that probably is unlikely to get taken care of in Congress.
All right. Thank you, Gene, for your email. We're going to go to Rich, who's calling from Moosehead Lake. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call today. I've called in the past, but wanted to bring it up. I spoke before the Joint Reconfirmation Committee for Ann Head for the Department of Professional and Financial Regulation, and they cover tramway safety. And I've been fighting a whistleblower suit for years in the state of Maine. I lost my job because I stopped a lift that was hot-wired with no safeties. And lift operators were never made to speak to the tramway officials. So my case was closed without ever talking to the operators. And it's been really frustrating. I've been trying to get people to change the law so that lift operators can't just avoid the calls from safety officials and to get representation for employees at the Tramway Safety Committee. Right now, Robert Foley from District 34 is helping me. But I just wanted to bring it up, and I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
Boy, that's an issue. I am just totally lack of a response.
Yeah, no, but it doesn't sound like a good situation. I have a son who's in the ski industry, and I worry all the time about the different things that can happen to somebody who's out there. And certainly we want to make sure that the lifts are the least of our worries. And so lift safety is something that we should look into, and I thank the caller for bringing this to our attention.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, why some children struggle with adversity more than others. Pediatrician and child development researcher Thomas Boyce says studies suggest while most kids are pretty resilient and ready to cope with stress, a minority are more sensitive, both to stressful situations and to a nurturing environment. He'll talk about how to help them and his new book, The Orchid and the Dandelion. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. There are literally millions of podcasts out there. How do you find your next favorite or even get started in the first place? Maine Public has a podcast shortlist that focuses entirely on podcasts created in Maine and provides easy access to a wide range of Maine's most informative, interactive, and entertaining podcasts. Do you have a Maine podcast that you really enjoy and would be a great addition to the podcast shortlist? Shoot us a note to shortlist@mainepublic.org. The Maine Public Podcast Shortlist is at mainepublic.org. Click on Podcast Shortlist under our radio tab. Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have Commonwealth Club of California, Why We Need to Talk About Climate Change. The guest is Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, an atmospheric scientist and an evangelical Christian who has been called, quote, the best communicator on climate change. That's Commonwealth Club of California, coming up in just a bit at 2 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what is happening in the legislature? With me here in Augusta, Eloise Vitelli. She's a state senator and assistant Senate majority leader. And Dennis Keschel, state representative on the Appropriations Committee and a Republican. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Representative Keschel, I understand you've introduced a bill that has something to do with how we elect our governor.
Yes, it does. And it could go across the entire number of people we elect. The issue is voting and how we choose our representatives. In this case, it's the governor. It was a bill introduced by Senator Saviello back in 2010 after there was a number of complaints about the fact that for the last few elections, we hadn't elected our governor by a majority vote. Ranked choice voting is one of the proposals to deal with that process. But, you know, as the state of Maine went through this ranked choice voting on our federally elected officials during the past election. I've had a lot of people comment to me about, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Why are we doing it this way? If we want to have a majority vote and not the plurality vote, let's get a true majority out of the process by having a simple runoff election between the top two vote getters. I think in some ways that makes sense, although I'm not seeking to really change the Constitution because I think plurality has served us well for the last 100 years. But having said that, it's one of those things I'm going to bring forward to the Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee this afternoon, right after this call-in show, LD 667, and I'm hoping to hear a lot about that. Ranked choice voting is a hot issue, and we'll see. And I recognize that there were two referendums. People keep bringing that up. But I also know that there are many people out there who were confused and upset with the process.
So I think that making sure that Maine voters' voices are heard is a critical issue for our state. And there are any number of ways that we need to be paying attention to this. Our voter system, on the whole, I think works extremely well in this state. But clearly, ranked choice voting has sort of raised some questions about other issues. I happen to support ranked choice voting and think that we should look to expand it to other offices. But I also understand that it's not as straightforward as a majority vote. So, I think we're going to keep having these conversations. And I thank Representative Keschel for bringing his bill forward, and I'll be happy to take a look at it and weigh it. And there are a couple others I know that are out there
there are also bills to put this before the state constitution and expand ranked choice voting,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And those have not come up yet for public hearing? And
not that I've seen.
All right. We're going to go to Glenn, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling about LD 893, which is to update the Maine Climate Action Plan. The existing plan has been kind of inactivated the last 8 years, and it was last updated in 2004, so it's out of date, and it has nothing about adaptation in it. So I'm just wondering, how do we get bipartisan support for a bill that has a small budget, and I'm told that bills with a budget in them go to appropriations, and that's where they go to die. So I'm just wondering, how do we get bipartisan support for this bill, which is complementary to other climate action plan, other bills? It just wants to have a vigorous process to update the plan so we know what we're doing.
Yeah. So I'm not familiar with this specific bill, although I understand that our governor is very much on the forefront of issues having to do with climate and has put Maine back into the Paris Climate Agreement, for example, as well as other states. So I know that this is a priority in this administration. I know it's a priority among many in our caucus. And there are a number of other bills that relate to climate change, to energy efficiency, to reducing carbon, and all of that is going through the process. And I think we'll have to see which one sort of captures the most support and comes out with the best chance of moving the state forward in terms of managing our contributions to climate change.
Well, I won't get into a debate about climate change and causes and all of that, but what I will say is I was the Bureau of Air Quality Control director from 1987 through 1995. I worked with Senator Mitchell very hard to reenact the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. We dealt with this issue, and there were a number of proposals that we put forward, and some of the ones that we backed away from in some areas, and because of public opposition. Having said that, though, I think your specific question dealt with adaptation.
Yeah,
and
the
ability, how are we going to address? We know many of us believe that the climate is changing. So what do we do? The ocean levels are rising, and so what do we do? And I think that's something that we should look at, and to the extent that I can, I'll read the bill, but to the extent that it is addressing those issues, that's something I think I can get on board with.
I would just add to that, in my experience on the Marine Resources Committee, we're already seeing how some marine animals, critters, are being forced to adapt in a sense, and then therefore how our fishing community is having to adapt to those changes. You know, clams are on the decline. Predation is coming in more than in the past. Lobsters are moving off coast. So, you know, we're already seeing the impacts of climate change and are having to adapt along with the resources that we're dependent upon.
Glenn, thanks for your question. Going on to Chris, who's calling from Mount Vernon. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question on, I believe the bill was LD 1504 a few years ago, dealing with solar power and CMP, and it was passed by the legislature, but was vetoed by the last governor, and I wonder if that bill is back up again. It has something to do with me paying CMP if I produce and put extra solar energy into the grid, and also paying CMP if I produce and use electricity of my own property, because I want to get panels, but I'm not going to do it if I'm rewarding CMP for my own personal investment.
Well,
I think he's talking about net metering.
And gross metering.
And I know that there are several bills in the works that address both of those. I can't tell you what the current status is of where they are. I don't know whether...
No, I don't know what the status is on any of those bills, but I do know that there was a, well, in fact, maybe one of them. I think gross metering went through the House just a week ago, and it was passed. That was Seth Berry's bill, if I'm not mistaken, on gross metering, and basically, I believe, did away with gross, if I'm not mistaken, gross metering. There is an issue, though. If certainly individuals like yourself may not be putting power into the grid, maybe just using it yourself. But for those that do put it into the grid, there is the issue of paying for that T&D, that transmission distribution aspect, using that facility, that infrastructure. And I think that is a question that a lot of people are asking about when it comes to bills like this.
So I actually have solar panels on my house. I've had them for about four years now, I think. We were grandfathered into the net metering when it was available to anyone. And we also pay for the R&D. So I think there is a way to get at this so that we can encourage not just rooftop solar, but more solar generation in general, and still maintain our distribution lines, because obviously they're important and we all currently still rely on them.
Well, I'll just say that I'm not a huge fan of photovoltaic, but having said that, I recognize that it exists and it's something that people would like to see invested in because of the renewable, clean aspect of it. But I do have my concerns about it. So,
Chris, thanks for your call. We will go to Maura calling from Falmouth. Hi, Maura. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about needs for housing for adults with autism and intellectual disabilities. Right now, there's over 1,700 on the waiting list. This is through DHHS and Medicaid funds. Traditionally, only 24 are taken off each year, and roughly 200 to 300 qualify. We also have over 748 children waiting for services to have Section 28. Is there any work on these bills to provide some relief? Thank you. I'll take my answer off air.
Well, I believe that there's always bills to attack the Section 28 and 21 wait list. It's a huge priority for both sides. And the question is, what dominates in terms of priority? And how quickly can you bring facilities up to speed so that you can take care of those on the wait list? So I'm not up to date on all of those issues because it's been almost 5 years since I was looking at that. But I do think that there's probably bills in it, and Senator Vitale could address that.
Well, I'm not familiar, actually, with specific bills to address this, but I know that it's something that is on the mind of the new commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services, and that budget will be up first, as I understand it, in the Appropriations and Financial Affairs Committee. And I would guess that this is an issue that will get some quick attention because it has been sort of hanging out there for a long time. And these are people's lives and livelihoods. I have some, again, some constituents who are faced with these kinds of situations. And it's painful, really, to see people struggling with lack of housing. And we've got to figure it out.
Yeah, and it's that whole issue of wants, needs. I see this as a need. And a balance between priorities, you know. And so therein lies the compromise, right?
Maura, thanks for your question. We're going to go to Mark, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking this call. I've been involved with services that help the homeless community, in particular in Portland, for the last year and a half. And I'm aware that in the last 6 months, they have lost funding. And I'm wondering if there's any plan on the table at this point to try to restore funding to those organizations that try to assist the homeless in the state of Maine.
I'm not familiar with what you're referring to, but I will certainly take a look and see what is afoot to address that issue. I know that there's some efforts underway to address homelessness among veterans, but I'm assuming you're talking about a much broader population. And again, this would fall in the area of needs, and we have to figure out how to address that.
And I am working with a homeless, a small homeless population, I should say a few people, up in the Skowhegan area. I don't know about the particular bill that you're talking about, but I certainly think that there are services out there that some of these homeless folks need, and we'll see what's going on with that.
Thank you, Mark, for your call. We're going to go to a tweet from Sandy. Do the representative and senator believe we might someday soon become a sanctuary state? How will we afford it?
Well, I can say that I'm not a fan of sanctuary status. I believe that I recognize the separation between the state and federal governments. So I do recognize that. But there has to be some ultimate decision maker in this whole area. And it's something that deals, I think, primarily with the federal government, and I'd like to leave it stay there.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. I think, you know, it touches on the whole shambles, really, that our immigration policies are in at the federal level, and it puts states and communities in a really tough position to want to be, you know, to provide humanitarian assistance to people who are escaping oftentimes really horrendous situations in their home countries. So I think we just have to do the best we can as a state to be welcoming and inviting of people who want to come here and live and work and contribute to our economy, and that will be a good start.
All right. Go ahead.
What I'd say, too, is we all have to urge our Congress to solve this problem. Fix the immigration laws so that people can go through a wider door and not through the back door.
I think that's going to be our last question, looking at the clock. I really appreciate both of you being here today, here on Maine Calling, joining us. We will have other leaders next month. For now, thank you, State Representative Dennis Keschel, a Republican from Belgrade, on the Appropriations and Financial Affairs Committee, and State Senator Eloise Vitelli from Sagadahoc, Assistant Senate Majority Leader. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.